Good afternoon. My name is Sally, and I will be your conference facilitator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Long-Term Care Hospital Special Open Door Forum. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Matthew Brown, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Sally. Good afternoon and good morning to those joining us on the West Coast. As Sally stated, welcome to the Long-Term Care Hospital Quality Reporting Program Special Open Door Forum. Matthew Brown, I'm with the Office of Public Engagement. I will help moderate this call, and I want to begin. First, thank you for your patience, but I want to share an open enrollment message. The Medicare open enrollment period is October 15th through December 7th, when all people with Medicare can change their Medicare health plan and prescription drug coverage for 2013. Please advise your patients that information on 2013 plans will be available beginning in October. They can call 1-800-MEDICARE or visit www.medicare.gov for plan information. If they are satisfied that their current plan will meet their needs for next year, they don't need to do anything. Thank you. And with that, I will turn the call over to our call lead, Charles Padgett, who will give speaker introductions and begin the call. Charles.
Hi. Thank you, Matthew. Good afternoon. I'd just like to welcome all of the LTEC providers and vendors who have joined us today on the call with the special open door forum we're holding today. We are going to be covering a few things. We're going to have an announcement from the Division of National Systems. We're specifically going to be going over updates to Section M of the LTEC care data set, which is the section on skin. And we'll end the call with a question and answer period. And just before that, we have the question and answer period. I'll be going over some frequently asked questions that have been submitted to the LTEC Quality Reporting Program mailbox. So to begin things here, we're going to start with the announcement from the Division of National Systems. And the representative I have from DNS today is Lori Grocholsky, and I'm going to turn it over to her at this point. Lori?
Thank you, Charles. Good morning and good afternoon to everyone. We want to remind providers that the Provider User ID Registration WebEx training is available for you to review. You may begin the process to register for your CMSNet User ID. When completing the CMSNet Access Request Form, please complete accurately and thoroughly. And you must provide an email address. Again, I can't emphasize that enough. You must provide an email address. Once your request is approved, you will receive your CMSNet user ID via the email address you entered on the request form. After you are registered with CMSNet, you will then be able to request a Keys user ID. A demonstration version of Laser has been posted to the QTSO, that's QTSO.com website, along with four WebExes related to the Laser application tool. Lastly, two final WebEx trainings will be posted on QTSO related to LTEC Care dataset submission process and LTEC assessment and validation reports by next week. At this time, I'm going to turn the presentation back over to Charles Padgett. Again, we will be accepting questions at the end of this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lori. Okay, now we're going to begin our presentation with Section M. I would like to introduce to you Terry Moda. She is a registered nurse, and she's also a certified wound nurse. She is with RTI International, and she is one of the advisors to CMS for the LTEC Quality Reporting Program. Terry?
Thank you, Charles, and good afternoon and good morning to those on the West Coast. I know that there were some slides posted up on the Special Open Door Forum website, so if you're following the slides, we're going to start at slide 3 and go over the objectives for today's presentation. So the objectives for the presentation today are to understand clarifications and changes made to Section M, and to code section them items correctly and accurately, as well as review answers to commonly asked questions. On slide 4, we have some key updates to section M. The first two are not only changes that have been made to Section M, but are also global updates in the LTAC Quality Reporting Program Manual. So the first is that references to 72 hours have been changed to 3 calendar days. The look-back period has been changed to assessment period. And specifically to Section M, there is clarification on numerical staging and unstageable pressure ulcers. And regarding necrotic tissue, Slough and eschar, since they are both considered necrotic tissue, we have a designation on the item set that says necrotic eschar, and that has just been changed to eschar in the manual. On slide 5, there's an overview of Section M items. Section M, item M0210, documents the existence of one or more unhealed pressure ulcers that are stage 1 or higher. M0300 documents the number of unhealed pressure ulcers at each numerical stage and for unstageable pressure ulcers. M0610 provides the length, width, and depth of unhealed stage 3 and 4 pressure ulcers and the length and width of unstageable pressure ulcers due to slough or eschar. M0700 identifies the most severe tissue type of any pressure ulcer, and M0800, which is only available on the discharge LTAC care dataset, identifies new pressure ulcers or pressure ulcers that have increased in numerical stage since the prior assessment. The slides following will focus on areas within Section M of the LTAC QRP manual that have had updates and clarifications added. So starting on slide 7, we're going to jump directly into item M0300, which, as I said just a moment ago, documents the number of unhealed pressure ulcers at each numerical stage and the number of unstageable pressure ulcers. For each of these ulcers identified, the LTAC is also required to document if the ulcers identified for each stage were also present on admission. Going on to slide 8, there are two clarifying statements that have been added to item M0300 general instructions relating to present on admission pressure ulcers, which can be found on page M-5 of the LTAC QRP manual. The first includes information related to the fact that clinical assessments performed on patients in the LTAC should be completed according to accepted clinical practice and comply with facility policy, state, and federal regulations. For example, a general standard of practice for newly admitted patients is that clinical admission assessments are conducted within the first 24 hours of admission. It's the expectation that the information required in the LTAC care dataset admission assessment would be coded based on that assessment and coincide with the findings that were completed within that same time frame. The second clarifying statement refers to the 3-day assessment period used in the LTAC care dataset. This 3-day assessment period is not intended to replace the time frame that is required for the clinical admission assessment. So for purposes of coding the LTAC care dataset admission assessment, it is the skin assessment as documented on the initial admission clinical assessment that is used. So for example, if a stage 2 pressure ulcer was identified on the LTAC's initial clinical admission skin assessment and the pressure ulcer increases in numerical stage, that is worsens, within a 3-day assessment period to a stage 3, it would be the initial stage of the pressure ulcer that gets documented on the LTAC care dataset admission assessment as present on admission. So let's look at an M0300 scenario on slide 9. Per facility policy, initial clinical admission skin assessment was completed on new patient Ms. J on day 1 of her stay. It was identified that Ms. J has 1 stage 2 pressure ulcer. By day 3, the wound is noted to be worsened and is a numerically restaged to a stage 3 pressure ulcer. The question is then, how should item M0300B1 and M0300B2 be coded on the LTAC care dataset admission assessment? On slide 10, we see that the coding for M0300B1 and for M0300B2 would both be 1. The rationale for this coding is that stage 2 pressure ulcer is the ulcer that was initially staged on the clinical admission skin assessment as present on admission, and therefore is what should be coded on the LTAC care data set admission assessment. The next item where there has been clarification is in item M0700, which documents the most severe tissue type for any pressure ulcer. On slide 12, we speak about the fact that each tissue type is listed in M0700 that refers to tissue that's visible in different stages as wounds evolve and heal, and that they are arranged from the healthiest types of tissue to the most devitalized. We're going to focus specifically on necrotic tissue. There are two types of necrotic tissue: slough, which is non-viable, yellow, tan, gray, green, or brown tissue that is usually moist and can be soft, stringy, and mucinous, with adherence to the base of the wound or present in clumps in the wound bed. The other type of necrotic tissue is eschar. Eschar is dead or devitalized tissue that is hard or soft in texture, usually black, brown, or tan. It may appear scab-like and is usually firmly adherent to the base of the wound and often to the sides and edges of the wound. Sometimes there are questions that have come in that speak to the difference, what the difference is between a scab and eschar. It's important to remember that scabs and eschar are different both physically and chemically. A scab is made up of dried blood cells and serum and sits on the top of the skin and forms over exposed wounds, such as wounds with granulating surfaces, like pressure ulcers. A scab is evidence of wound healing, so a pressure ulcer that was staged as a 2 and now has a scab indicates it is a healing stage 2 and should remain staged as such. Eschar is a collection of dead tissue within the wound that is flush with the surface of the wound. Eschar characteristics and the level of damage it causes to tissues is what makes it easier to distinguish from a scab. So it's extremely important for staff who are staging wounds to understand the differences between these types of tissues. So let's look at an M0700 scenario. We're on slide 15. A patient has two pressure ulcers. One is a stage 2 pressure ulcer on the right ischial tuberosity that is healing. It has epithelial tissue that has resurfaced 25% of the ulcer. The second is a stage 3 pressure ulcer on the sacrum that is filled with 75% granulation tissue. How should item M0700 be coded? For M0700, remember that each pressure ulcer and the wound bed must be looked at to determine the most severe type of tissue. So for this particular example, M0700 should be coded with a 2, granulation tissue, as the coding is based on the sacral ulcer, which has the most severe tissue type of the two pressure ulcers present. Moving on to slide 18, we're going to be looking at item M0800, which is the worsening pressure ulcer status item. M0800 documents on the discharge assessment the number of pressure ulcers that have worsened as compared to the prior assessment. The worsened definition includes the number of pressure ulcers that are new since the prior assessment and or the number of pressure ulcers that have increased in numerical stage, that is, have worsened since the prior assessment. In M0800 coding guidelines, there was text added to item M0800 to further clarify coding for numerically staged present on admission pressure ulcers that become unstageable, are debrided, and can be numerically restaged, as well as further guidance on unstageable pressure ulcers and how worsening is determined. With regards to worsening, it is important to remember that although it is clinically known that when a stage 2 pressure ulcer covers with slough and is deemed unstageable, that the pressure ulcer has indeed worsened to at least a 3, stage 3. However, CMS acknowledges that since the wound bed cannot be seen, the LTAC cannot commit to a numerical stage for this type of ulcer. This is why, for example, if a stage 2 pressure ulcer is present on admission and covers with slough, and for some reason is never debrided, and on discharge remains unstageable, item M0800 would not document this as a worsened pressure ulcer because it could not be numerically staged, even though clinically we know that it is worsened. A similar situation occurs the first time an unstageable pressure ulcer is numerically staged. If it is the first time you are numerically staging an unstageable pressure ulcer that was present on admission, it is not considered worsened and is still considered present on admission. If subsequent to this first numerical staging, the pressure ulcer further deteriorates and is restaged at a higher numerical stage, it is then that the pressure ulcer would be considered worsened and not be considered present on admission. We have one last scenario here for M0800. A patient's admission assessment documented an unstageable pressure ulcer due to slough on the right ischial tuberosity. 5 days into the LTAC stay, the patient's pressure ulcer was debrided and was numerically staged as a stage 3. At this point, we would still consider this pressure ulcer not worsened and present on admission, but let's continue on. On discharge, it's noted that the pressure ulcer was reassessed and has increased in numerical stage, that is, it has worsened to a stage 4. How should item M0800 be coded? For codes M0800A and M0800B, stage 2 and stage 3 respectively, the code is 0. The code for M0800C is 1. The rationale for this coding is that the stage 3 pressure ulcer is not considered worsened because it was the first numerical staging of that unstageable pressure ulcer after debridement. Subsequently, the pressure ulcer did increase in numerical stage to a stage 4 and is therefore considered worsened on the LTAC care data discharge assessment. It would also be considered not present on admission at this point. Let's move on to some Section M frequently asked questions. On slide 22, why has CMS adapted National Pressure Ulcer Advisory Panel guidelines related to blisters and deep tissue injury? CMS consulted subject matter experts for clinical validation of pressure ulcer coding. At the time these items were finalized, it was determined that there was much that current science was unable to confirm regarding deep tissue injury. CMS opted for an holistic approach to pressure ulcer assessment that includes characteristics of surrounding skin instead of a pure focus on what color is visible inside of an intact blister. Interestingly, there has been a recent study conducted by Karen Farid that's available in this month's Ostomy Wound Management Journal related to the fact that the validity of the definitions of pressure ulcer-related discolored areas, such as those seen in deep tissue injury, has not been formally tested. Slide 23, another Section M FAQ, and this has to do with present on admission pressure ulcers. Present on admission pressure ulcers are only allowed to be coded in acute hospitals when physicians or those with legal authority to make medical diagnoses have documented a present on admission pressure ulcer. So why is nursing documentation allowed in the LTAC for coding present on admission pressure ulcers? Presence on admission coding for short-stay acute hospitals focuses on billing codes specifically for purposes of Medicare payment under the IPPS. There are no CMS POA regulations related to Medicare payment in LTACs at this time. Further, on slide 24, state nurse practice acts differ among states as to who can stage pressure ulcers. Also, the American Nurses Association has confirmed that it is within the scope of the nurse to stage pressure ulcers. We're on slide 25 now, another Section of FAQ. Why are pressure ulcers that have been repaired with grafting procedures considered surgical wounds and not considered pressure ulcers? Due to the surgical intervention, tissue has been moved from the patient to close the pressure ulcer. Grafting provides the tissue to assist in that closure. Therefore, this is a surgical closure of the wound and no longer able to be staged or classified as a pressure ulcer if the surgical wound dehisced. Therefore, for purposes of coding the LTAC care data assessments, a pressure ulcer that has been repaired by a grafting procedure is considered a surgical wound and would not be coded as a pressure ulcer. On slide 26, how are Kennedy ulcers to be documented on the LTAC care dataset? Kennedy ulcers are pressure ulcers that some individuals get as they are dying. They are a type of of pressure ulcer, a subtype of pressure ulcer, and therefore they should be coded as a pressure ulcer at the stage that it is seen in the LTICARE data set at the appropriate stage. The next section, MFAQ, is on slide 27. If a patient had an identified stage 2 pressure ulcer on the clinical admission assessment and on day 2 the pressure ulcer was now a stage 3, as I understand it, it is coded as a stage 3 not present on admission. Is this correct? No, this is not. The LTAC care data set requires the skin condition documented be from the skin assessment obtained as close to the time of admission as possible. So in this case, the stage 2 is what would be coded on the admission assessment as present on admission. If on the discharge assessment this pressure ulcer is still a stage 3, it would be coded as a stage 3 worsened and not present on admission. Next section, MFAQ, what do we do if a pressure ulcer worsens during the first 3 days of the patient's admission to the LTAC? How do we code the wound? Patient assessment reflected in the admission assessment data set should coincide with the patient's admission assessment for the purposes of determining if a pressure ulcer was present on admission. A wound determined to be present on admission would specifically need to be on admission. Thus, if a present on admission wound worsened during the 3 days, the admission assessment record should capture the wound stage at admission as well as the stage to which it worsened. It's on the discharge record, the wound would be captured in the stage to which it worsened if it had not healed. And this would be considered not present on admission. Slide 29. On day 2 of the 3-day assessment period, a pressure ulcer was assessed as unstageable. On day 5, the wound was debrided and staged as a stage 3. On day 24, the day of discharge, the wound was restaged as a stage 4. How would this scenario be coded on the admission and discharge assessments? On the admission assessment, it would be coded as unstageable and present on admission. On the discharge assessment, it would be coded as a stage 4 worsened, not present on admission. This is because the first time it was able to be numerically staged after debridement, it was staged as a stage 3, and then subsequently increased in numerical staging to a stage 4 prior to discharge. And this is the last slide in section M for the FAQs. So I'm going to hand the presentation back over to Charles.
All right. Thank you so much, Terry. Really appreciate it. I'm going to continue and just go over some frequently asked questions that we've received, that we've been receiving in the LTAC Quality Reporting Program mailbox. We looked through the majority of questions that we've received and tried to just pull out some of the repeating themes that we're seeing and areas that we feel people are having some trouble understanding or just need some further clarification on. So I'm going to review a few of these, and then we will give everybody a chance to ask questions. So the first one I'm going to start with is on slide 30. And the question that was asked is that I need clarification on the definition of LTAC. Are these long-term acute care hospitals or long-term care hospitals? And the answer was long-term care hospitals, or LTACs, and long-term acute care hospitals are different names for the same type of hospital. Medicare uses the term long-term care hospitals. These hospitals are certified as acute care hospitals that treat patients requiring extended hospital-level care, typically following an initial treatment at a general acute care hospital. If a hospital is classified as an LTAC for the purposes of Medicare payments, as denoted by the last 4 digits of its 6-digit CMS certification number, or CCN number, in the range of $2,000 to $2,299. It is subject to the requirements of the LTAC Quality Reporting Program. If your critical access hospital has long-term care beds that either provide skilled nursing facility level or nursing facility level care, it is not required to comply with the requirement that was mandated for LTACs, which are hospitals. Moving on to slide 31, Where can I find the definitions for the LTAC quality measures? The most current and up-to-date definitions for the three LTAC quality measures, which are catheter-associated urinary tract infection, or CAUTI, central line-associated bloodstream infection, or CLABSI, and the pressure ulcer measure, we're asking that you refer to the LTAC quality reporting program manual, which is available for download at the LTAC quality reporting program website. And that is www.cms.gov/medicare/quality-initiatives-patient-assessment-instruments/LTEC-quality-reporting/index.html. We also invite you to visit the website for updates to measure specifications for each of these measures that may result from the National Quality Forum's review of these measures. Next question on page 32. Do we report patients with all payer sources for CAUTI, CLABSI, and pressure ulcers for LTEC or just patients admitted with Medicare payer source? And the answer is for the pressure ulcer measure, the LTEC care data set applies to all patients receiving inpatient services in a facility certified as a hospital and designated as an LTEC under the Medicare program. Data collection using the LTEC care data set applies regardless of patient's age, diagnosis, length of stay, or payment or payer source. You can find more information related to this in Chapter 2, Section 2.1. For the CAUTI and the CLABSI measures, each LTEC must submit data for these measures on all patients from all inpatient locations, regardless of payer source. And more information about those two measures is found in Chapter 5 of the LTEC Quality Reporting Program Manual in Section 5.1. Next page, 33, we have two similar questions, the first of which is, are all demographic information items required? And the second of which are GGO-160, functional mobility, lying to sitting on the side of the bed, bowel incontinence, peripheral vascular disease or peripheral arterial disease, diabetes, height, and weight required only for admission assessments. And we're asking, in reference to this type of question, that you please refer to the LTEC Quality Reporting Program Manual, which, again, is available for download on the LTEC Quality Reporting Program website. And specifically, we're asking that you look to Appendix E if you're interested in required what's required, specifically item by item. So we provide in Appendix E item by item guidance on the requirements for the completion of the LTEC care data set. Next page, 34, what is the definition for planned discharge? A planned discharge is one where the patient is non-emergently medically released from care at the long-term care hospital due to some reason arranged for in advance. And the next question was the opposite of that. What is the definition for unplanned discharge? And the answer to that is an unplanned discharge is defined as a transfer of the patient to be admitted to another hospital or facility that results in the patient's absence from the LTEC for longer than 3 calendar days, including the date of transfer, or a transfer of a patient to an emergency department of another hospital in order to either stabilize a condition or to determine if an acute care admission is required based on emergency department evaluation, which results in the patient's absence from the LTEC for greater than 3 days, or when a patient is unexpectedly leaves the LTEC against medical advice, when a patient unexpectedly decides to go home to another setting, for example, due to the patient deciding to complete treatment in an alternate setting. Unplanned discharge does not include planned transfers to an acute care hospital for admission for planned intervention, treatment, or procedure unless the patient does not return to the LTEC within 3 days. we're going to turn to page 36 now. This question states, can CMS please clarify whether there is a 72-hour rule or a three-calendar-day rule in the following instances? When a patient leaves an LTCH to go to another facility and then returns to the LTCH for purposes of determining whether to submit a discharge assessment, and two, when a patient dies within 72 hours or 3 days after leaving an LTCH for another facility. And the three-day interrupted stay is in accordance with the payment policies that have been established at CMS. If the policy states that day one of three begins on the day of transfer, then that day plus two would dictate the definition of 3 days. So, for instance, if a patient is transferred on August 1st, that date plus two calendar days would be August 3rd. If a patient dies during an interrupted stay, then the LTCH should submit an expired data set. So if a patient is transferred out of an LTCH and is expected back, say they're transferred for a planned procedure at another facility, and they're expected to return to your facility and they die at the other facility, we would expect that you would fill out an expired assessment on the expired data set on that patient. If the patient dies afterward, the LTCH should have submitted a discharge item set because the patient did not return within 3 days. So, for instance, if a patient is transferred outside an LTCH and is gone longer than 3 days, at that point the LTCH would be responsible for filling out a discharge on that patient. However, we would not hold them responsible for knowing about a patient's death beyond that time period. We're going to move to page 37. If a patient's planned discharge is Friday, but the discharge is delayed until Sunday, what should the assessment reference date be, otherwise known as the ARD? The ARD on discharge assessment will always be the patient's actual discharge date, and more information related to this is found in Chapter 2 of the LTCH Quality Reporting Program Manual. And the LTCH also has 5 days to complete the discharge assessment. So after the ARD that's established on discharge, the LTCH will have 5 days to complete the discharge assessment from that date. If a patient dies during the assessment period, should you fill out both admission and expired assessments? And the answer to this question is yes. Both admission and expired assessments should be completed. The ARD for expired assessments would be the date of death. Okay, moving to page 38, I'm going to go over a question that was asked pertaining to Section Z. Question is, should the signature sections be filed and held at the hospital? If so, how long should they be kept? And a similar question, do I have to retain Section Z? And our answer to that is CMS will not be receiving the signatures provided in Section Z under items Z0400 and Z0500. We receive only the submission date when you submit the data set. We strongly suggest that you retain what you submit to CMS, including Section Z, according to your facility and state regulations and requirements. And facilities should comply with their requirements pertaining to electronic signatures if they require them. So if a facility is going to use electronic signatures, we are asking that you follow your own facility policy and state regulations surrounding the use of electronic signatures and the protection of those signatures. Moving on to page 39, question, does the LTCH care data set require the signature of a registered nurse? The answer is no. CMS has removed the language surrounding and the requirement for a registered nurse's signature for the LTCH care data set submission. Does the LTCH care data set require that an LTCH have an assessment coordinator on staff? And the answer to this question as well is no. CMS has removed the language pertaining to an assessment coordinator. Lastly, on page 40, I'm just going to review the presentation slides will eventually be posted on the LTEC Quality Reporting Program website. They are posted on the CMS Open Door Forum website. Transcript and audio file will also be posted on the CMS Open Door Forum website. I'll go over that right now. That's www.cms.gov/outreach-and-education/ODF-special-ODF.html. And again, at that website, you'll be able to find a transcript and audio file for this special Open Door Forum and be able to find the presentation slides that we're using today. And eventually, next week, we'll be posting the slides on our LTEC Quality Reporting website. We really want to thank all of those who have taken time to submit questions and comments and feedback CMS receives is really highly appreciated. It's useful to us, and we've taken all of these comments and questions into consideration in the work that we're doing in updating our program manual and helping to make sure that providers have what they need to begin submitting data for this program. We've used all questions from the conference and our quality reporting program mailbox to guide our decisions to the changes that we've made to the manual and to some of the policies. And also, we've used some of these questions during the frequently asked questions that we've reviewed today in the LTEC quality reporting or the special open door forum. So that's all we have today. We are going to turn it over for a question and answer period, and we will try to answer your questions as best we can.
Thank you, Charles. Sally, at this point, would you remind the callers how to enter the queue to ask their questions?
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Please limit your questions to one question and one follow-up to allow other participants time for questions. If you require any further follow-up, you may press star 1 again to rejoin the queue. Your first question comes from the line of Roberta Steinhauser with Madonna Rehabilitation Hospital. Your line is now open.
We're just a little bit confused on part of the definition for an unplanned discharge. So if we discharged a patient, say, to a short-term acute care hospital for an intervention like a surgical intervention and the planned stay was 5 days, so it was past the 3 days, according to the last bullet point, it appears that that would be an unplanned discharge when essentially it was planned. It's just that the stay was planned to be more than 3 days.
Yeah, thank you for the question. That's a good question. It would be considered a planned discharge. That is something that's a procedure that was planned for in advance. We would consider that a planned discharge.
Okay, so my follow-up would be that last bullet point on the unplanned discharge, when you say it does not include planned transfers to an acute care inpatient hospital for admission for a planned intervention, treatment, or procedure unless the patient doesn't return within 3 days. You just have to base it on whether the plan was for the patient to stay more than 3 days, and if the plan was really to stay 2 days, that's where I'm
exactly
confused.
Yeah, exactly. You're basing it on what was planned. So if you sent a patient out for a surgical procedure and you planned for them to be away for 5 days, that would be considered a planned discharge.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Your next question comes from the line of Gary Williams with Kindred Healthcare. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for having this forum. Very helpful. My question is regarding data gathering for the care data set. In the manual, you refer to different methods of data collection, those being objective, looking to the patient's medical record, and also subjective data, either through interviewing the patient, family, or other caregivers. Now, my question is this: does the patient information that you obtain from any of those, primarily subjectively, does it have to be also documented in the patient record?
Okay, so our answer to that question would be yes. We would state that there should be support of your answer within the medical record.
Okay, so if I obtain information by interviewing a patient's family member, that information I need as the caregiver, I need to also document that in the medical record as well as the care data set.
Hi, this is Stacey at CMS. What you document in the LTAC care data set ought to reflect, be reflected in the medical record, in a comprehensive kind of way.
Okay.
Because, you would be doing, taking plans of care, you would have some kind of, documentation of what you're doing with your patient. So it should all knit together.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of B.J. Larson-Jones with Wellesley Woods Long. Your line is now open.
Hi. My question has to do with the data submission. There's Appendix E that came with the manual. I wouldn't swear to it, but there's a timeline for submission of data for pressure ulcers, cavity, and CLABSI, and this is the timeline that says the quarter four calendar year data should be submitted by May 15th. And then there's also another calendar that talks about the assessment data that we submit sort of concurrently for the pressure ulcer patients, and that's so many days after admission, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm a little bit confused about these two different timelines, and I was wondering if you could clarify.
Okay, sure. Thank you very much for your question. That's a great question. The guidance that we give as far as the concurrent timeline where we're asking you to submit kind of on an ongoing basis LTAC care data sets 7 days from the date of completion, we ask to have things submitted that way so that we're not receiving everything from every provider on one date. So essentially, we're asking you to submit concurrently, those LTAC care data sets. The time we give from the end of the quarter until May 15th essentially is a chance for you to submit corrections to the record or data that you didn't realize was missing, and you may discover was missing or something. Say there's a data set that you realize wasn't submitted, you would have a chance to submit that, and that's the reason we give that extra time until May 15th to submit. Ultimately, because we do give that, you do have until May 15th to submit your data.
You still should be submitting it all along for all the assessments that you're doing for pressure ulcers, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
For the CAUTI and the CLABSI, CMS is going to be pulling the data that's in the NDS tool. NHSN tool, right? It's already in the tool, and you're just pulling it out. Correct?
We'll be receiving the data from the CDC.
Okay, yes. Okay. All right, thank you. That helps.
Your next question comes from the line of Nancy Blackburn with Maury Regional. Your line is now open.
If a patient who is a Medicare patient is transferred for services outside of the hospital, either to acute care, emergency room, or for outpatient services not available at the LTAC, if that patient returns within 24 hours to the LTAC, is that billed to Medicare or is it billed to the LTAC?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to ask that you submit your question to the billing department here at the Centers for Medicare. We don't answer billing questions. We're really the quality reporting program here. And if you like, you can even submit that question to our LTAC quality reporting program mailbox, and I'd be happy to forward it to the appropriate person to give you an answer.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Your next question comes from James Mike with Missouri Heartland Long-Term Acute Care Hospital. Your line is now open.
Thank you. My question is related to the discharge location section on the care data sets. Specifically, there are two additional discharge locations, hospital emergency department and ID/DD facility. They're not part of the standard Medicare discharge status codes. I was wondering if there's any particular reason for that. Specifically, we're trying to automate this process as much as we can, and we don't want to have to create additional fields for non-regulatory reasons if it's not necessary.
All right, thank you for your question. I'm going to ask that you submit that question to our mailbox, if you would, and
okay.
We'll give you a written answer on that. And for those of you that are interested in the response, we can post that response as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jehoza Pagulayan with Holy Family Medical Centers. Your line is now open.
Hi, my question is for Lori. For the processing of the CMSNet user ID, we submitted our application a week ago, and I thought like it will take one day if you fax it before 3 o'clock p.m., but I haven't received any email as of yet.
Hi, this is Lori. Yes, you are correct that it did indicate that you would receive a response back within a period of time. What I'm going to recommend is if you have not received confirmation by September 20th, that you contact the CMS Net Help Desk. Okay, so it's just give us a little extra time there.
Okay. Because I called them back because they said if you don't receive it within 4 days, to call the CMS
right.
Net. And I tried to call
you
them.
You are correct. That is what is indicated. It's just going to take a little bit more time, and again, if you haven't received a confirmation by September 20th, please contact the CMS Net Help Desk. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Mary Dalrymple with LPRAX. Your line is now open.
Hi, my question is about the required fields, and you listed the bunch that are required for calculating the measure. And the Appendix E, so I'm talking about like lying to sitting inside a bed, bowel, PVD. And the manual in Appendix E says those are required for admission and voluntary with a default on discharge. But the submission specifications say that if you don't put an answer other than not assessed on any of the assessments where it's a valid question, that you will get a warning saying this field is needed, or you know, you'll get that warning that says if you don't answer this question, it may affect your payment. So I'm wondering if the manual, since it came out later, is what we should follow, or the transmission specifications.
Hi, we are going to ask that you go ahead and submit that question into the LTEC technical mailbox, and also it was indicated that you should follow the technical submission specifications.
Okay.
And that there are fields that are voluntary, but a default response is required for the submission.
Right.
Maybe a dash. It may be, depending on the question, it may be dash, it may be a 99, it may be Z, and those are the default responses so that the data can be submitted.
And the reason we do that is that lets us know that a provider did not accidentally miss a question,
right,
but did consider the question and either could not answer it, one, or decided not to answer it, number two. either of which can be indicated by a dash or the code of 99 if it's listed under the as a choice there.
Right, and if they elect to not answer the question, but the system requires some type of a response in order to be submitted electronically, those are the sort of default responses.
Okay, so for now we should go with the transmission specifications, and I'll send that question to the
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, but do send that question to us, Mary, if you would, and we'll certainly get a written answer out to you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Christina Wang with Fundamental Administrative Services. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you very much for hosting this forum. It's very helpful. I would like to verify with just a few things here, please. This is concerning the discharge date. Well, first of all, how do we define a date? It's from midnight till 11:59 p.m.
That's correct.
Yes. So hypothetically, we have an unplanned discharge. This patient goes to an ER, return unanticipated. The discharge took place at 11:59 p.m. on day one. So that's day one. The three-day period will end at day three, 11:59 p.m.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, and if this patient returns by the end of day three, it's considered interrupted stay. We don't need to submit a discharge assessment it's considered interrupted stay. But if this patient returns on day four at 12:01 a.m., then it's not a It's not an interrupted stay. We will need to do the discharge assessment as well as the admission assessment. Am I correct?
Yes, you are correct.
Oh, okay. Yes. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Avril Edwards with Health East Care Systems. Your line is now open.
You were speaking about a definition for LTAC quality measures in the manual, and you gave a fairly lengthy web address. Could you repeat that, please?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Which web address are you asking for again?
It was the one where we confirmed the manual definitions for LTAC quality measures, and it was the cms.gov/Medicare, and that was
Absolutely. I'll give it again for you. And this is our LTAC Quality Reporting Program website. So the address is www.cms.gov/medicare/quality-initiatives-patient-assessment-instruments/LTEC-quality-reporting/index.html. And for those of you listening, also, I'm going to give you an easy way to find our LTEC quality reporting webpage. Is you can just, if you Google LTCH, LTEC quality reporting, our webpage, both the technical and the main quality reporting webpage, are probably one of the first three that come up when you Google LTEC quality reporting. That's an easy way to find it if you can't remember the address or you can't remember where you wrote it down. It's easy to get to from there. Did you get that?
I did. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. No problem.
Your next question comes from Joan Carson with Gaylord Hospital. Your line is now open.
Okay. Thank you. My question is related to the CMSNet user ID. I'm wondering, is there one per provider, or does each user that might be entering data required to have a separate CMS Net User ID?
This is Jack Williams. Yes, each user from the provider must have their own ID.
And that, okay, so does that applies to the CMS Net User ID as well as the Keys User ID?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Becky Fowler with Baptist Restorative Care Hospital. Your line is now open.
My question has to deal with Section I on active diagnosis, and I understand the guidelines to say that needs to be physician documented. How close to those specific words does the physician documentation need to be? The example being malnutrition, when there's a weight loss, lab, a new peg, can those be interpreted as malnutrition, or does it have to be that exact wording in physician diagnosis documentation?
Thank you for the question, and we are asking for that exact wording in diagnosis. We've had people submit similar questions where they say, you know, often a physician will write that somebody is cachectic or losing weight and stuff like that. But we need an actual diagnosis of malnutrition, and not an interpreted diagnosis.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Amanda Dawson with Select Medical. Your line is now open.
Yes, in the phrase planned in advance, what past event or time point does the word advanced refer to?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
So, number one, we're going to go ahead and ask that you submit that question. For plan, you're referring to, I assume, to planned discharges.
Yes, that's correct.
So generally, when a patient there's a situation where the team, a facility, is planning on discharging a patient to another setting, potentially home, they work on that process together, or I would imagine, in advance. So it would be a known situation as opposed to the unplanned, which is obviously abrupt, emergent transfer to an emergency department, leaving AMA, that kind of thing.
But if you submit your question, we will give you a formal written answer to that. That's a good question.
Okay, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Your next question comes from Barbara Smith with Specialty Hospital. Your line is now open.
Hello. Thank you for this conference today. My question deals with when the first staging is being done, and I know you're saying it follows the hospital guidelines for admission assessment. We have specific people who do our staging and measuring. And my question is, does the staging have to be done within the first 24 hours if that's what our admission assessment says?
It should be in sync with that.
Okay. That's what I wanted to clarify. Thank you so much.
Yes. Your next question comes from Karen Finnerty with RML Specialty Hospital. Your line is now open.
Thank you. We just wanted to ask for clarification. If a patient is transferred out of the LTAC to another level of care, let's say a short-term acute care hospital, for services not provided in the LTAC and returns within 2 days to the LTAC with a new pressure ulcer, is that pressure ulcer coded as facility acquired new for the LTAC?
If by the time that the patient is discharged from the LTAC, it has not resolved, it would be considered new.
Do you have to complete a new admission assessment on the patient and submit data when the patient returns to you if it's within those 3 days?
No, only if it's been 4 days or more.
So if it's 4 days or more and the patient comes back with a new pressure ulcer, do you count the pressure ulcer to you at that point?
So at that point, you would be filling out a new admission assessment, and at that point, that pressure ulcer would become present on admission.
Very good. That's the way we understood it. We just wanted to hear the clarification. Thank you.
Okay. No problem. You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Kim Fisher with Kindred Healthcare. Your line is now open.
Yes. My question is for Lori with the CMS Net Access. There's supposed to be third-party access to that. Do you know when that'll be available for registration on the CUTSO website?
I'm sorry, I don't. Would you be willing, please, to submit that into the mailbox?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
On the CUTSO website on the LTEC, it says, note, if you need corporate or third-party access, do not register for multiple individuals. Separate forms for the corporate or third-party user registration will be posted at the CUTSO website when they are available. And I was just curious if you had a date for that. So I can submit
that. Yes, if you submit that, I'll be glad to get a response back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Amanda Dawson with Select Medical. Your line is now open.
Yes, I wanted to ask about the question having to do with the primary diagnosis treated in the previous setting. We were wondering whether that has to do with the primary diagnosis that's being billed from the previous hospital, or whether it has to do with the reason that the patient came to the hospital. That initial admission to that initial hospital.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Certainly. It has to do with, in the care tool, the A1820, what was the primary diagnosis being treated in the previous setting? And you're supposed to put an ICD-9 code in for that. We were wondering whether that had to do with, if we asked the hospital that, you know, sent us the patient, what the diagnosis was. It's going to be a billing code, typically. We weren't sure if that's what you were looking for here, or according to the documentation, it looked like you were looking for the reason that the patient initially went to that hospital, which might not be the same thing as the billing code that the hospital used.
Right. That's a very good question. Can you please submit that question to the quality reporting mailbox?
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jennifer Trollo with Acuity Specialty Hospital. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on the on slide 28, where it says in the last sentence, the wound as described on that slide, because it worsened, would no longer be captured as present on admission. I'm having just a little bit of trouble getting my head around that.
Terry?
Sure, Terry, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So you're concerned about the last portion of it not being captured as present on admission?
Right.
Well, because the wound worsened, it would not be considered present on admission. If it had stayed the same, then that would be a different story. But since the wound worsened while at the LTAC, it would no longer be captured as present on admission.
Okay. I guess it's hard to understand because there's a big clinical difference between someone coming in with no breakdown and developing breakdown than having, you know, severe breakdown and having it devolve to even more severe breakdown.
And remember, you're capturing this at two points in time. You're capturing it at the admission assessment and the discharge assessment. So lots of things can happen in between. And this question was specifically what happens within those first 3 days if the wound worsens. So there are things that do evolve over the course of the stay, as you suggested, but remember, you're coding on admission and on discharge, and sometimes anything's happened in between.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Christina Wang with Fundamental Administrative Services. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon. I have another question, please, regarding the pressure ulcer. And this is a follow-up of the previous question that someone already asked. Hypothetically, if a patient was just discharged on day one and returned on day three, and what would the discharge? This patient has, a stage two pressure ulcer, and the patient returns on day three with a stage three pressure ulcer, say he spent 2 days at the ER. Is there a way to document this? I understand in this case it's considered an interrupted stay, but is there a way to document this worsened pressure ulcer that took place somewhere else, not at our facility?
As far as the LTAC care data set is concerned, there is not a way to document that. We consider that pressure ulcer worsening as a responsibility of the LTAC if it happened within the 3-calendar-day period. If it's beyond that, you then will complete a new admission, and it would become present on admission there.
Right. So during that 3-day window, it's considered the LTAC's responsibility.
That's correct.
Oh.
And we think of this as really a care coordination issue. If this is something that is happening a lot between hospitals that you're transferring patients to, we certainly encourage you to stay in communication with them and work with them to solve this problem. But yes, you are correct.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Your next question comes from Amanda Dawson with Select Medical. Your line is now open.
Sorry, this is my last question. I was wondering, it now says that the care tool needs to be printed and part of the medical record. And this is more of a concern than a question, but if nurses are allowed to do present on admission documentation and it's printed and it becomes part of the medical record, it becomes a legal document, even if the hospital has a policy that nurses cannot make a medical diagnosis. So it's a legal document, it's discoverable, admissible, and so forth, and I don't know how to address that issue.
Yeah, can you just repeat that? That's a good question.
Some of the updated information we got about the care tool says it needs to be printed as part of the medical record. You actually print the care tool itself. Not to mention you have the documentation, but you have. In the care tool, the nurses make a present on admission documentation of the pressure ulcers, and that documentation becomes part of the legal document as part of the medical record.
I'm sorry, this is Terry. That
yes.
would be similar to writing, an assessment of a pressure
yes.
ulcer within a nurse's note. That too
right.
is part of the legal document. And nurses, when they're staging pressure ulcers, are not diagnosing them. They're,
okay.
they're merely stating what they're identifying and what they see as visible on skin assessment, which is within their scope of practice.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure it did not come across as a diagnosis.
Right, right. No, it would come across as part of the health assessment that nurses are allowed to do.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from Sherry Schumann with Ernest Health Incorporated. Your line is now open. Sherry Schumann, your line is open.
Let's take the next caller, Sally.
Your next question comes from Mary Dalrymple with ALPRAX. Your line is now open.
Hi, I had a question about that May 15th deadline for sending the final data. Is that
sure.
a cutoff date? In other words, if there are assessments from this first quarter do you not want them after that date?
When you say the first quarter, what are you talking about?
I mean, so for this October 1 through December 31st quarter, there is that deadline.
So exactly. What will happen is anything you submit after that date will not be considered in consideration of compliance versus noncompliance.
For the fiscal year 14 payment update.
Great.
So in other words, then May 15th cutoff,
yep.
If you haven't submitted any of your data for the last quarter, October through December, by May 15th,
yep.
That will determine your APU reduction or non-reduction. So you have up until that point in time to submit data for the purposes of, you know, correcting any of that data. You have up until that date. If at some point we have to have sort of a line in the sand,
yep.
from which to make decisions. Data obviously is going to be coming in, you know, after December 31st for another APU update cycle.
Right.
But for the data that comes in between October and December of calendar year 2012, you have up until May 15th to get it in, get it right.
Gotcha.
Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Well, there's a lot of dates, aren't there?
Yeah.
I also want to clarify back to the information or the questions related to Claudia and CLABSI, NHSN reporting, and the pressure ulcer data. So obviously there's the LTAC care data set coming in through KEYS, and then there is the CDC NHSN reporting coming in through the NHSN. Reporting for CLABSI and CLABSI events ought to be reported to the NHSN as close to the time of the event as possible because it's part of surveillance. They do, if that's not doable, then there's a certain monthly time frame close to that event that is provided in the NHSN guidance. And if there are no infections, that data should be coming in monthly as well.
Meaning you should be reporting zero.
Yeah, you either must be reporting the infections or zero monthly. And if you need to correct any of that information, you have up until the May 15th. The LTAC care data set should be submitted 7 days by 7 days after it's been completed. And if for some reason you're not able to submit it, things happen, then you do have the padding this year to up until May 15th to get it in. I hope that helps. I think I put everybody to sleep.
Your next question comes from the line of Christy Abshire with Kindred Hospital. Your line is now open. Christy Abshire, your line is open.
I'm sorry. I think I'm thoroughly confused now regarding dates. We start reporting starting on October 1st, and we start reporting with those admits, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So anything before October 1st is not reported. What about the patients that are discharged after October 1st that were not admitted before October 1st?
You would not report them. We want
okay.
any patient that has been admitted after October 1st. If they have not had an admission after 12:01 a.m. on October 1st, then you do not report their data.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Your next question comes from Mary Dawson with Regional Hospital. Your line is now open.
Hi. Say we are diligently entering data and we miss an assessment, say an unplanned discharge, and then we readmit them and then end up actually discharging them. If we somehow miss a particular assessment but have got it right 99.9% of the time, is that going to impact our reimbursement?
Okay, first of all, I just want to say that if you're when you're submitting your data sets to the Keys ASAP system, if you make a submission out of order, that is, you submit an admission data set, and then say you forget to submit your discharge, and then they're readmitted and you submit another admission data set, you're going to get a message that says, this has been submitted out of order. There's a sequencing problem here, and it will alert you to the fact that you have forgotten to submit something or that there's a problem, and it will allow you to reconcile that problem.
Okay, and where I'm looking at is if we do the admission assessment, they go out on an unplanned, and then we miss the readmission. Miss the readmission. So you don't get a discharge from us and you don't get a readmission from us, but then you get a discharge. Is that, I mean, it's like if we're doing diligence as best we know.
And I see
we
what
miss
you're saying. So you're saying to us it would just look like an admission and a discharge, and it would look probably like a longer stay than normal.
Exactly.
We just encourage you to correct it if you find the mistake. I mean, quite honestly, we would have no way of knowing beyond you telling us.
Okay, I just wasn't sure if this was reconciling with the billing information and if best effort is going to be to due diligence.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Sherry Schumann with Ernest Health Incorporated. Your line is now open.
Yes, this is in regard to the planned and unplanned discharge. I'm looking at a patient who is discharging from the LTAC to the short-term acute for a procedure, and then the plan is to discharge that patient home from the short-term acute. Would that be considered a planned discharge?
They're not returning back to the LTAC?
No.
And they left your facility with a plan to go to the acute care hospital?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So like this would be an example, a patient who's going for a pain pump prior to, you know, final discharge to home.
That would be considered a plan.
Yeah, that would be considered a planned discharge.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Joza Pagulayan with Holy Family Medical. Your line is now open.
Thank you. On Chapter 2, signature page not transmitted to KISS ASAP, and it should be retained within the patient's medical record. We are not electronic record yet, so are you suggesting we should retain this section to our to the patient's medical record, the signature page?
Yes.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to the presenters.
Charles, would you like to offer any closing remarks?
Sure. Again, I just want to thank everybody for taking the time to join us today. Really appreciate all the questions. Some great questions out there. And if you think of any more, you know, we certainly encourage you to submit to our LTAC quality reporting mailbox. We are making certain that we are getting answers out to you now. Again, we will be posting the slides from this Open Door Forum on our LTAC Quality Reporting Program website next week. Today they are available on the CMS Open Door Forum website on which the transcript and recording will be posted as well. And I just want to continue to remind you to check the LTCH Quality Reporting Program website frequently for updates, upcoming trainings, upcoming open door forums, and we will continue to get as much information out to the providers as possible, and hope to get all your questions answered. That's it. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Charles. And with that, I'll turn it over to our operator who has instructions on the Encore feature.
Thank you for participating in today's Long-Term Care Hospital Special Open Door Forum conference call. This call will be available for replay beginning at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time today, August 30th, 2012, through midnight on September 1st, 2012. The conference ID number for the replay is 20497757. The number to dial for the replay is 855-859-2056. Thank you.
Thank you, and this concludes our call. You may hang up now.